the professor. He was 8 years old. A telegram came from the hospital, and since his father, a Russian immigrant, could not read English, Maury had to break the news, reading his mother's death notice like a student in front of the class. "We regret to inform you," he began. On the morning of the funeral, Maury's relatives came down the steps of his tenement building on the poor Lower East Side of Manhattan. The men wore dark suits, the women wore veils. The kids in the neighborhood were going off to school, and as they passed, Maury looked down, ashamed that his classmates would see him this way. One of his aunts, a heavy-set woman, grabbed Maury and began to wail, "What will become of you? What will you do without your mother?" Maury burst into tears. His classmates ran away. At the cemetery, Maury watched as they shoveled dirt into his mother's grave. He tried to recall the tender moments they had shared while she was alive. She had operated a candy store until she got sick, after which she mostly slept or sat by the window, looking frail and weak. Sometimes she would yell out for her son to get her some medicine, and young Maury, playing stickball in the street, would pretend he didn't hear her. In his mind, he believed he could make the illness go away by ignoring it. How else can a child confront death? Maury's father, whom everyone called Charlie, had come to America to escape the Russian army. He worked in the fur business, but was constantly out of a job. Uneducated and barely able to speak English, he was terribly poor, and the family was on public assistance much of the time. Their apartment was a dark, cramped, depressing place behind the candy store. They had no luxuries, no car. Sometimes to make money, Maury and his younger brother David would wash porch steps for a nickel. After their mother's death, the two boys were sent off to a small hotel in the Connecticut woods, where several families shared a large cabin and a communal kitchen. Fresh air might be good for the children, the relatives thought. Maury and David had never seen so much greenery, and they played in the fields. One night after dinner, they went for a walk and it began to rain, and rather than coming in, they splashed around for hours. The next morning, when they awoke, Maury hopped out of bed. "Come on," he said to his brother, "get up." "I can't." "What do you mean you can't?" David's face was panicked. I can't move." He had polio. Of course, the rain did not cause this, but a child Maury's age could not understand that. For a long time, as his brother was taken back and forth to a special medical home, forced to wear braces on his legs, which left him limping, Maury felt responsible. So in the mornings, he went to synagogue by himself, because his father was not a religious man, and he stood amongst the swaying men in their long black coats, and he asked God to take care of his dead mother and his sick brother. And in the afternoons, Maury stood at the bottom of the subway steps and hawked magazines, turning whatever money he made over to his family to buy food. In the evenings, he watched his father eat in silence, hoping for, but never getting, a show of affection, communication, warmth. At 9 years old, young Maury felt as if the weight of a mountain were on his shoulders. But a saving embrace came into Maury's life the following year. His new stepmother, Ava. She was a short Romanian immigrant with plain features, curly brown hair, and the energy of two women. She had a glow that warmed the otherwise murky atmosphere his father created. She talked when her new husband was silent. She sang songs to the children at night. Maury took comfort in her soothing voice, her school lessons, her strong character. When his brother returned from the medical home, still wearing those leg braces from the polio, the two of them shared a rollaway bed in the kitchen of their apartment, and Ava would kiss them goodnight. Maury waited on those kisses like a puppy waits on milk, and he felt deep down that he had a mother again. There was no escaping their poverty, however. They lived now in the Bronx in a one-bedroom apartment in a red-brick building on Tremont Avenue, next to an Italian beer garden where the old men played bocce on summer evenings. Because of the Depression, Maury's father found even less work in the fur business. Sometimes when the family sat at the dinner table, all Ava could put out was bread. "What else is there?" David would ask. "Nothing else," his mother would answer. When she tucked Maury and David into bed, she would sing to them in Yiddish. Even the songs were sad and poor. There was one about a girl trying to sell her cigarettes. The words went, "Please buy my cigarettes. They are dry, not wet by rain. Take pity on me. Take pity on me." Still, despite their circumstances, Maury was taught to love and to care and to learn. Ava would accept nothing less than excellence in school because she saw education as the only antidote to their poverty. She herself went to night school to improve her English. Maury's love for education was hatched in her arms. He studied at night by the lamp of the kitchen table, and in the mornings he would go to the synagogue to say Yizkor, the memorial prayer for the dead, this for his mother. He did this to keep her memory alive. Incredibly, Maury had been told by his father never to talk about her. Charlie wanted young David to think Ava was his natural mother. It was a terrible burden to Maury, For years, the only evidence he had of his mother was the telegram announcing her death. He'd hidden it the day it arrived, and he would keep it the rest of his life.